Totally Football show at the World Cup.
People say, ah, Brazil, carnival, sex, Pelé.
Day 9. Shaqiri is on tonight as Switzerland down the Serbs. Against Los Ticos, Brazil find the answer is Firmino, and so does the ref when Neymar wants a penalty. And in the afternoon, Gylfi feet ain't got no rhythm as Nigeria catch Iceland cold. Saturday, it's Group G, England's group, as Belgium take on Tunisia. And there's a double bill of Group F fixtures, South Korea against Mexico, and Germany, one game away from an early exit, taking on Sweden. It's the Totally Football Show, totally at the World Cup. And on board today, Jack Lang's back.
Evening.
James Horncastle's here too.
Hello there.
And it's a return for Tom Williams.
Hello.
Hi, Tom. So many excitements on this day 9. What did you like most?
There was something to enjoy in all the games, I think. I think probably Serbia-Switzerland as the kind of main course. A very even game that developed into this brilliant slugfest in the second half in the rain. And then Shaqiri racing away and scoring a winning goal. I think that was the one that stuck out for me.
Yeah, huge narratives elsewhere as well, though, with Brazil, who looked in real trouble. 0-0 with 90 minutes played, but rescuing that at the death, Jack.
Yep, looking a lot like they were going to stumble, but the only man stumbling in the end was the coach, Chicho. A little tumble in excitement at the final whistle. I think they played a got-out-of-jail-free card there,
right,
for sure.
And he's done a Gareth Southgate, hasn't he? He's injured himself.
He was limping in the press conference afterwards, right, apparently.
And then the other game today, the Nigeria-Iceland one, Nigeria throwing Brazil's great regional rivals, Argentina, a real lifeline. Nigeria beating Iceland, which means that Argentina aren't quite as out as many at all.
No, and arguably the goals of the day by one player in particular, Ahmed Musa. Both of which I think a lot of Leicester fans wishing, why weren't you scoring those kind of goals for us?
Well, that's not the only club be thinking that. A quick check on the scores then on Friday in Russia. Group E, the early kickoff was Brazil against Costa Rica that finished 2-0 to the Seleção. Coutinho and Neymar, the scorers. Ahmed Musa with both goals for Nigeria in their Group D clash in the afternoon with Iceland, and then back to Group E in the evening, the game in Kaliningrad between Serbia and Switzerland, which finished 2-1, featuring sensational goals, particularly this from Shaqiri. Wow, what a finish. And if you haven't seen the goals from this game, listener, it is worth going and seeking them out, because his little legs pounding away as he raced upfield on this glorious Swiss breakaway. James.
No, and it was a wonderful move completely. They split Serbia in half with just two very simple forward passes. And I think one of the great things about it was Shaqiri is essentially free on goal from the halfway line. He's with a foot chase with Tosic. And Tosic doing everything to kind of claw Shaqiri down to the ground. And that frame that Shaqiri has, you mentioned he's got those little legs.
Yeah, I mean, he has to. I think his stroke rate is about twice that of Tosic, no?
Yeah, and I think you can see why he's called Power Cube.
Is that what he's called?
That is his nickname in Switzerland, because, I mean, there is something cubic about his his whole musculature, if you like. And, yeah, manages to keep his composure and finish between Stojkovic's legs. And a wonderful finale to a game. We've had some great ends to matches throughout the tournament, but particularly today with what happened in the Brazil game and obviously what happened in this one.
Mm.
And lots of subtext to it as well.
Yeah, well, let's just go back a little bit on this game, because it all began with a fantastic goal from the Serbs. Mitrovic, who'd missed some chances in Serbia's opener, but he certainly got hold of this chance in the first half.
He did. I thought he was quite unlucky in the first game, because the chances that fell to him were he was slightly off balance, maybe rushed himself a little bit. But here, this was exactly where he wants the ball served. Dusan Tadic turned his man inside out, put in a glorious cross. And yeah, it's kind of Mitrovic's meat and drink, really. That's now 13 goals in 15 Serbia starts, which is a phenomenal record, really. And from that point, it looked like Serbia had a great platform to go on and win. And I think they thought so too, because they were knocking the ball around in those early stages, at least, with a great deal of confidence, looking good every time they came forward, really. And you, at that stage, I was wondering how Switzerland would get back into it.
And what got them back into it? How did it change, Tom?
Well, it's hard to say, really. The game just became very open in the second half. As I said before, a real slugfest, a real back and forth. And I think Switzerland just managed that a bit better than Serbia. Even before Shaqiri got the winner, he'd had that shot from the right-hand corner of the penalty area that hit the post. And they'd got into good positions in the first half, Switzerland, but were quite wasteful. I think we have to say that Serbia should have had a penalty in the second half. I think of all the bad VAR that we've seen at the tournament so far, that was probably the most inexplicable decision.
That was the worst decision by VAR.
By very VAR. I mean,
two men.
A Mitrovic sandwich, basically. Yeah. But obviously they got away with that, Switzerland, and then, you know, Shaqiri breaks through at the end. And a fantastic equaliser as well from Granit Xhaka.
Yeah.
And I think because he's got Valon Berami beside him, or even behind him, doing all the dirty work, he's able to play a little bit more expansively. We know that he can strike a ball beautifully. We've not seen it that much with Arsenal, but every now and again, he just bangs on in from 25 yards. And it was quite a difficult ball to hit because it came from a blocked shot that Shaqiri had had, and the ball was running across him, slippery turf as well, and he absolutely leathers it past Stojkovic. And then that clearly gave Switzerland the impetus then to go on and impose themselves and win the game.
Well, this was a richly satisfying game to watch, a really meaty contest. And the context was interesting as well, because no sooner had he scored than he wheeled away doing a double-headed eagle celebration, which, as I understand it, is a Kosovan gesture. And that was echoed by Shaqiri after he grabbed the winner, which was obviously something that there's been a lot of attention about, the fact that these Kosovan Albanian players for the Swiss national side facing Serbia. Indeed, Sasha Gurionov reporting that fans were being searched when they entered the Kaliningrad arena for the match, having to take their sweatshirts and jackets off to show that they didn't have any kind of pro-Kosovo messages on T-shirts underneath. So quite a gesture, that, for those Swiss players. It leaves, anyway, Group E delicately poised. Brazil are on 4 points. Switzerland also on 4 points, but with one goal less of goal difference. Serbia a point behind, with Costa Rica there in last place with no points whatsoever. Brazil, who could have really been in trouble thus if they hadn't been able to break the deadlock. Jack, what would the mood have been like with 90 minutes played in Brazil watching this game?
Oh, I could almost hear the knives being sharpened as that second half was wearing on. Personally, I think they actually played rather well in that second half. It was mainly the finishing that was suspect. So the first half, they enjoyed a lot of possession. I think over 300 passes, apparently the most in a first half since 1966 in a World Cup match.
So this is against Costa Rica?
Yeah, such was their dominance. But they weren't translating that into clear-cut opportunities. I think Willian, who was hooked at the break, wasn't really himself. Paulinho wasn't really getting into good positions. And then Neymar, who I'll come back to in a minute, wasn't really doing much either. Second half, they came out with a greater sense of urgency. I think Brazil sometimes need that. They need to get the crowd cheering behind them. They looked good and they just created plenty of opportunities, but just seemed determined to waste them. And I think Neymar was more culpable than anyone for that. I don't think he had a very good game at all. We can talk about the penalty in a second.
Yeah.
But
so
just
this, sorry.
But just aside from that, he was making poor decisions. He didn't have the explosiveness that we expect of him. And it was very clearly a player working his way back to fitness. I think he's still a long way from his best.
Costa Rica were dug in and resolutely defending, and no one more than Keylor Navas, who had an extraordinary game in goal.
Yeah, did well. But most of Brazil's shots were straight at him. So the one that Neymar had that was perhaps heading to the roof of the net after the cross from the right was very much savable. The one Felipe Coutinho had was also right at him. Brazil were just fluffing their lines, really.
So at 78 minutes, with tension really building now and the pressure, the sensation of a Brazil side that's already drawn their first game 1-1, Neymar goes down, kind of comically, but the referee points to the spot.
Mm-hmm.
It was a particularly ridiculous tumble by Neymar, no?
Yeah, if you were being enormously generous, you might say that he was moving at a speed and changing direction in a way that the slightest of contact could have shifted his equilibrium. But I think that would be a massive injustice to Giancarlo Gonzalez, who the actual strength of the impact he made on Neymar was
minimal. Laid a hand on his jersey. That with that, when the referee went over to check VAR, you still didn't. I don't think anyone expected him to change his mind. And Neymar, I certainly don't think was yeah. awaiting.
It didn't go very well with Neymar. Who it's difficult to know what to think of Neymar in games like this, because I think you can simultaneously hold the view that he is fouled an awful lot and could probably do with a bit of protection from referees sometimes, while also thinking that the kind of victim complex he has and can develop really quickly over the course of one game is not going to do him or Brazil any favours at all. Mm. So the way he was reacting to the referee late on after the penalty incident with a free kick, after he'd been booked for throwing the ball down the ground very pettily, the referee gave Brazil another free kick and was trying to make a point to Neymar, and Neymar was saying, "Don't touch me, don't touch me." And this, you know, whatever you think of Neymar, you know, the whole celebrity that surrounds him, just on a basic pragmatic level, we know, we've seen him get red cards in the past, we've seen him overheat in the past. It's not doing the team any favours. And I think he was probably fairly lucky to stay on the pitch.
All right, well, what did help the team was Chiche bringing Firmino on. And that seemed to make all the difference. And it certainly led to the opening goal, which was, what was it, in the 90th minute?
Yeah, both goals coming in stoppage time.
Right.
And both changes that he made, making a real impact. It's a super attacking team that they ended up with, because you've got, obviously, Coutinho and Firmino playing in midfield. And then you had Douglas Costa, Neymar, and Gabriel Jesus up front. So, I mean, that is an incredibly offensive lineup. And yeah, Firmino gets the knockdown. I think Gabriel Jesus did very well to actually hold off the defender to ensure there was still time for Coutinho to get that ball and score. And then, of course, Costa, who I thought otherwise, you know, he was running down blind alleys, lost the ball on a few occasions. But as he did so well for Juventus in the second half of last season, puts the ball in and Neymar's able to get his goal. And
96 minutes and 49 seconds that goal was timed at.
Yeah. And we'll probably look back on that and you'll check the record books and say 2-0 win for Brazil against Costa Rica does not tell this whole story about just how tense and how difficult a game that was for them.
What's interesting to me after the game, though, was the sight of Neymar in tears. He kind of put it down to a mixture of, you know, relief about how the game went, but also his long road back. But also the post-match comments. So Gabriel Jesus kind of called for Brazil's media, "Oh, you know, you need to back us, show us support." Thiago Silva came out in defence of Neymar saying, "Oh, you know, you've all been hammering him. We can't fight the people with microphones other than with our performances," which I think is a bit bizarre, because the coverage of Brazil in Brazil has been almost universally positive for months on end. They've, you know, to the extent that Tostão, the former Seleção player, in his pre-tournament column, even voiced concerns that people were going overboard in their praise for the side, saying, "Oh, you know, we're not criticising anything. Everything seems to be fine." And yet you've got, apparently, developing a kind of backs against the walls feeling within the squad, which I'm not sure is justified, which, you know, would be a slight concern for
these
me.
These parrots talking.
Yeah, this was Neymar's post-match comments. Even parrots can talk.
Yeah.
But I'm out there walking the walk.
I think the biggest positive for Brazil, or one of the biggest positives, is the fact that Coutinho has emerged as a potential match winner. And we know that the big problem in 2014 was that when Neymar didn't do it, no one did. And I thought Neymar had a bit of a 2014 sort of game today. He seemed to be living through this very intense individual psychodrama. Someone put a video on Twitter of all the times that he told the referee to F off, and then that very peculiar scene at the final whistle of him sitting on the pitch and weeping. And yes, on the one hand, he's come back from a three-month injury layoff, but on the other hand, it's a group game against Costa Rica. So you've got this very weird maelstrom of emotions swirling around Neymar. But thankfully, Coutinho now in two games, okay, his goal against Switzerland didn't win the game, but he was the guy who provided the breakthrough. And then again today against Costa Rica, when the ball drops in the box in the 91st minute, he's the guy who goes in and scores. And I think that's a big plus for Brazil, that, you know, while Neymar is easing himself back to top form and getting over this injury, they've got someone else who can decide games even when he's not at his best.
It's going to be a fascinating finale to Group E, because you'd expect Switzerland to go through. They'll be taking on Costa Rica, who are already out. And Serbia and Brazil will have effectively a playoff for the other spot in the last 16. Ooh.
You're listening to the Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power.
Group D, everybody. Volgograd. Now, when we left things yesterday, it was with Argentina in tears, their World Cup dreams in tatters. The slim hope that maybe the fairly dismal-looking Nigeria could do something against the impressive Icelanders in Friday's game, and that would throw Argentina a lifeline. Lo and behold, Ahmed Musa.
In the country, and it's the Musa, and it's the Musa, 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 Musa. Goal!
Jack, this is you this afternoon. Tough game for those of us who have repeatedly told anyone listening that Ahmed Musa is rubbish for 5 or 6 years.
Yeah, guilty. I watched him a fair bit for CSKA Moscow, and to be honest, never struck me as much beyond a very, very quick human being. But fair play, he took those goals really well today.
And the first? Woof.
Yeah, I mean, they were both excellent goals. The first one was an emphatic finish after, I think, the defender just went the wrong way. Ragnar Sigurdsson, he thought the ball was going past him. Musa controlled it before he knew
but
what was
control
happening.
Was fantastic. Mm.
It was. But
it wasn't an easy ball to...
Goal, it starts off with Nigeria defending in their own penalty area. And
from a long throw-in.
From a long throw-in. From, you know, the key Icelandic tactic. Nigeria break. I think it was Iheanacho plays it out to Moses. He canters down into space on the right and crosses. And, as you said, sublime first touch from Musa, who's mid-air, almost Bergkamp-esque, if I'm not getting carried away with myself.
Jack, and then, yes, you are.
Oh, you are.
And then as the ball lands, hits it on the half volley, a really difficult ball to control, and slams it home, and then scores another cracker a few minutes later.
Yeah.
I play devil's advocate?
Go on.
And say that it was a fine goal. I don't think the first touch was all that, because the ball goes above head height.
Yeah, but the ball's coming in so high that he really... That's the thing, it wasn't
okay
an easy
first
stop.
Touch. It got to where he wanted it to go. It's not, you know...
Next time we play five-a-side, Jack, I'm going to ping a ball at you at chest height and tell you to bring it down like Ahmed Musa, and then we'll talk.
Challenge accepted.
If you were listening to yesterday's show, you recall Arno Adeoye of Yahoo Sports feeling a little bit pessimistic about Nigeria's chances. How did he react to this 2-0 win over Iceland? Let's find out.
It was an emotional roller coaster, I must admit, because I was down before our first game against Croatia, and yesterday I was incredibly pessimistic. But as I said before the game, I was expecting our manager to change things around. Victor Moses played as a wing back, but we were slow and tepid in the first half. But in the second half, halftime change, Tyrone Eboué came in. Within 4 minutes, we were ahead, thanks to Ahmed Musa, who seems to be having a great time at World Cups. And the interesting thing about Musa is he has had a torrid time since joining Leicester. He lost his place as a regular starter in the Nigerian national team. He had not scored an international goal in 12 months. And now he came up with the goods as expected. And as pessimistic as I was yesterday, I'm very optimistic facing this incompetent Argentina side as we saw yesterday.
Anu, speaking of Argentina, who've not been doing too well so far, you beat them in a friendly not too long ago. Can you do it again?
Yes, why not? The 4-2 friendly win. Funny enough, it was in Russia. It was in Krasnodar in November. They were leading 2-0 at halftime, and then we came back 4-2. So the only difference then was there was no Messi. And judging by this World Cup, there has been no Messi either. So, I mean, why can't we do it? With the way the goal difference stands and all, a draw could be enough for us to go through.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Yes. So it's going to be a pretty interesting finish to Group D as well. Croatia on top currently with 6 points. Nigeria now in second place with 3. Then Iceland and Argentina both on 1 point. So what did Mr. Raw do, Tom?
Well, in a way, he heeded the fans. I'm not saying that he was actually taking advice from them, but I spoke to some Nigerian fans this week for a piece that I wrote, and there's been clamour for Nigeria to switch to a 3-5-2 system ever since they turned to it at half-time of the friendly against England at Wembley. And if we remember that game, England basically played them off the park in the first half, and then when Nigeria switched to a back three, they got on top and actually played quite well, got back into the game with a goal from Alex Iwobi. And the fans who I was speaking to were saying, we think this is the best way to get the best out of this group of players, and that's what Gernot Rudd did for the game today. But slightly surprisingly, dropped Alex Iwobi, which is a very bold call. I mean, I'd say probably Nigeria's most well-rounded attacking player. He was on the bench, didn't come on until stoppage time. They played with Musa and Iheanacho up front, which is quite a natural partnership. You have the pace of Musa and you have the physicality and the technical skill of Iheanacho. And Victor Moses was moved from the right wing role that he's been playing in of late for Nigeria to the sort of right wing back role where he plays for Chelsea. And I think he looked a lot better because he was just able to motor up and down, completely bossed that right flank on his own, set up the opening goal for Musa. So I think you have to give Ruhr credit for taking the gamble of going to a 3-5-2, dropping a key player in Iwobi and giving a chance to Musa that he took very emphatically.
Didn't he, though? Didn't he? So they need to beat Argentina. Paul McIntosh saying, are Nigeria capable of closing the game down and stifling Argentina, or is it going to be a thrilling all-or-nothing shootout? Argentina, who in the meantime, such was their faith in Nigeria, actually held a minute's silence on television today for their national team, Jack. Sports Channel Tico, all the pundits standing around solemnly, just saying nothing for a minute. Extraordinary scenes.
Yes, very po-faced. And that was kind of replicated in a temporary but full-hearted support for Nigeria in this game. So the website Olé had the main headline before the game was "Do it for us." I saw pictures of Lionel Messi photoshopped into that glorious Nigeria shirt. So there was no doubt who the Argentinians were supporting here. But I think when the two sides face each other, I think it's going to be a harem, scarem thriller.
Like last time.
Yeah, I think there's every chance of that because Tom was talking about how Nigeria have found a system that works for them. It looks as though the early signs are that Jorge Sampaoli is just going to throw everything up in the air and change a lot of his side again. We've got no idea what Argentina are going to throw up, and it could be anything.
That game is coming up on Tuesday, the 26th of June, 7 o'clock, British summer time. Make a date for that. Of course, you've got Argentina not making it out of the group. Are you changing your mind about that, James?
No, I think you've got to be careful what you wish for. In wanting Nigeria to win this game and produce a performance that few people thought they were capable of, as Tom said, they've just clicked. They seem to have found a system that works. Exactly what Argentina haven't done.
Right.
I think Nigeria will win.
They've awakened the dragon.
Yes.
That's what's happened.
I mean,
okay.
It could be a real classic. You've got great ingredients in it. On the one hand, you've got a very young Nigeria team who have found a way of playing and have got this great win, but still very raw and have got a lot of very young, untested players.
Like
the manager, yes, indeed. And then an Argentina team, you know, completely reeling from that defeat to Croatia, who've suddenly been given a chance at redemption, but who don't seem to know what they're doing when they're on the pitch together. So it could be quite explosive.
Could also be revenge on the cards for Nigeria, because we all know they've faced Argentina in multiple World Cups. I think I'm right in saying that Argentina have won them all by just a single goal. So Nigeria well overdue some World Cup joy against Argentina, I think.
Wow. Cannot wait till next Tuesday at 7 o'clock, British summer time. By the way, Nigeria have a classic shirt, and our pals at classicfootballshirts.co.uk are screening all the games from the World Cup on Saturday and Sunday night at The Box in Hackney, where they'll have a bar and a pop-up shop with all sorts of iconic and obscure designs. You can find out more at facebook.com/classicfootballshirts.
Sun, sea, sand and football. Watching the World Cup on holiday sounds like paradise, until you try watching a game online and realise seconds before kickoff that it's blocked. Well, instead of bemoaning your decision to book a trip during a tournament that comes around once every 4 years, you need to get yourself a virtual private network from bestvpn.com, and you'll be able to access the internet freely wherever you are this summer, all for less than the price of a pint. Because you listen to the Totally Football Show, you can get 70% off a VPN by visiting bestvpn.com/podcast. Bestvpn.com will set you up with a VPN in minutes so you can watch the football from your deck chair or by the pool. And when it comes to security, bestvpn.com will also protect your internet activity from prying eyes on open Wi-Fi networks. No matter where you are in the world, you can access your online home comforts with a VPN. So unlock the internet today with bestvpn.com. Find out more and get 70% off by heading to bestvpn.com/podcast.
What's coming up on Saturday? Listener, I will tell you. First off, England's rivals Belgium face that Tunisia team that England narrowly beat last Monday. That's 1 o'clock at Spartak Stadium. Then we're off to Group F. 4 o'clock, South Korea take on group leaders Mexico in Rostov. And then at 7, Germany try and bounce back from their Mexico defeat as they face Sweden at the Fish Stadium in Sochi. Let's find out more about those games, beginning, of course, with Germany. They're just one defeat away from a humiliating exit from the World Cup. Beaten by Mexico in their opening game, outplayed and outthought all over the pitch. What's Yogi Love going to do? Well, producer Ben spoke to Rafa Honigstein to find out what he's expecting.
I don't think we'll see wholesale changes. Löw came out in defence of his team saying that there was not the right time, and there was no reason to fundamentally break with the trust that he has in the spine of his side. But Mats Hummels is unlikely to play. He injured his neck in training and will probably not recover. He's still left open whether Mario Gomez will play up front in place of Timo Werner. I personally don't think he will. And I think Marco Reus is widely expected to come in place of Julian Draxler to offer just a bit more oomph and pace up front, because Germany's movement and their sort of lack of incision, I think, was the biggest issue going forward, apart from all the other defensive issues we already talked about.
Raf, as you say, there were many, many problems in that defeat by Mexico. But are the problems easily solved by these changes, or is there something more endemically wrong with this vintage of the mineshaft?
We will see just how deep-rooted these problems are. Löw was very candid in his assessment. He said nothing worked. Our game with the ball didn't work. Our game without the ball didn't work. There was a lack of dedication, a lack of commitment when it came to tracking back. The same, perhaps, lack of sharpness and focus made Germany's play very ponderous. And, of course, they were exposed time and time again by Mexico's counter-attack. Now, I think Sweden, because of the different challenges that they will pose to Germany, will create different issues. I think it will be about finding a way into the box without resorting to crosses, which is something they'll just play into the hands of Sweden. And Löw himself said, you know, if we do that, then Sweden will just say thank you. They love that. So Germany will have to sort of keep going, keep moving, and trying to find spaces in what will be a very deep, massed defence. And at the same time, be careful about the odd counter-attack and certainly about dead ball situations. So it's a game of patience. And I think the mix has to be right between a bit of urgency and a bit of fast-paced combination football, but not losing their heads and crumbling under considerable pressure.
So all in all then, Raf, do you think they're going to do it tomorrow?
I'm still hopeful that Germany will do it. I think there is enough quality in the team to overcome Sweden, but of course they need a bit of luck perhaps. They need the game to go in their favour, and the longer it will be a clean sheet for Sweden, of course the pressure will just rise and Sweden's confidence will grow with that. So Germany need to come through this, and it'll be a good test just how strong they are, both as a footballing team, but also in terms of their mentality.
You can get more of Raphael Honigstein's thoughts at ESPN FC. Germany-Sweden then. Two most recent matches between these teams have produced a total of 16 goals. Ooh. 16 goals in two games. Of course, that famous 4-4 draw when Germany were 4-0 up and then Sweden came back in the second half. Crazy. But then Germany followed that up by beating the Swedes 5-3 in Sweden in qualifying for 2014's World Cup.
When Germany was still good.
I think there might be a lot of goals in this. I know we've got accustomed to Sweden keeping things tight. Mm. But their plans for this game have been affected by a serious bug running through the team. Ooh. Where a number of their defenders are going to be out. So, I think that's obviously not the best way to go into this game.
Definitely not.
So,
didn't Mexico also have a bug before their game against Germany?
That's Ooh. True.
An ongoing bug, I believe.
Mexico did lots of things before their Germany.
Yeah, Mexico had the...
they had the sex party.
Allegedly.
And the flu.
Yes, and the flu.
And the flu. If you're expecting a goal fest, I'm not sure who's going to do the goal scoring for Sweden, because they don't do goals. That one that they managed against South Korea, which was from the penalty spot, that was their first in 402 minutes of international football. As for Germany, remember this stat about three of the last four World Cup winners have gone out of the subsequent tournament in the group stage. It could happen, Tom, because these problems aren't, they didn't just come about in the Mexico game.
No, I mean, as you were saying, their form going into the tournament was really poor. And I think we all said to ourselves, well, it doesn't really matter because they're only friendly games. We know Germany are good. We saw what they did at the last World Cup. We saw what they did in qualifying. We saw what their reserves did at the Confederations Cup. They'll be fine. And then the competition comes around and they're caught totally cold by Mexico. And this is something we've seen in recent World Cups, the defending champions struggling to get out of the group phase. That's probably no coincidence. I think what happens with teams that win World Cups is because of the status that those players acquire, signs of perhaps rot, too strong a word, but you wouldn't...
A fall off in form.
Yeah, would not be picked up on as much because these guys are the world champions.
Yeah.
And who saw what happened to Spain in 2014 coming 4 years on from them winning the World Cup? And yet they were out after two matches. And Germany now find themselves in a very similar predicament in that they've been completely played off the park. I mean, it was only 1-0. It could quite easily have been 3 or 4. They just weren't at the races. And there have been crisis talks in the camp. I mean, Manuel Neuer said, you know, that the players have never used such strong words to each other. All sorts of, you know, conversations going on behind the scenes to try and, you know, try and pull themselves out of this slump. And from what Rafa said and from what... Jogi Löw said in his press conference today, it doesn't seem like there's going to be any sort of revolution in terms of personnel or tactics. Well, I think what Jogi Löw is saying is
that Kedira, for example, and Kroos were left behind by the Mexicans.
I mean, I suspect that if anyone drops out, I think Kedira is probably a good candidate in that he was completely overrun by Mexico. But I think what Jogi Löw was saying was that I trust these players. This is the way that we have always played over the last few years. Mexico was a blip. We, you know, I trust the players to carry on doing what they've been doing in recent years. So looks like there's probably going to be a couple of changes. But in terms of the tactics, I don't think too much will change. I think what Jogi Löw wants to see is just more application and a response to that massive shock against Mexico.
Kedira was really interesting yesterday. He was saying that they watched 8 Mexico games before their World Cup opener. They had the under-20s play like Mexico, so that their preparation was impeccable. But Mexico played completely differently to how they'd seen them play in their sort of analysis. And on the field, it wasn't so much just Jogi Löw, but on the field, the players couldn't react and couldn't find a solution to the problems that they were being faced with at the time. There was none of the kind of leadership that you might have seen in Germany sides past, where you have Schweinsteiger or Philipp Lahm, who can all of a sudden talk and say, we need to do this, we need to do that. There were no players going over to Jogi Löw, for example, to say, what do we need to do here? And the changes were like, so, you know, I think the takeaway for that was, Sweden, whatever you've been doing for the last few months, don't do that. Do something completely different. And you might surprise Germany and get something out of this game.
Germany's a bounce back with a win?
Yes.
Probably yes.
Jack?
Definitely yes.
Okay. Also in this group, by the way, South Korea are taking on Mexico. South Korea, who we've raised the issue of them being pelted with toffees on their return from the 2014 World Cup. Listener Phil Kim in Korea writes in to explain the origins of that insult. As a food product, it's quite popular, says Phil. But as a way of insult, it's the equivalent to throwing up the middle finger. The expression originates from 1964. There was a middle school entrance exam question that asked for the ingredients of making toffee, of course. The question incorrectly featured 2 accurate answers. The students that chose the correct answer but were penalised were denied acceptance. In protest, the students made toffee with the alternative correct answer and threw it at the student board. And it's gained unnecessary venom and now stands to mean go screw yourself.
Fantastic.
Isn't that amazing?
It's a sensational detail.
Yeah. Thanks, Phil Kim. Wow.
Yeah.
Anyway, South Korea are taking on Mexico. Mexico, who, of course, are the architects of the whole German crisis. I wonder what they'll get thrown at them if they go out early. Anyway, to hear a little bit more about how Mexico are feeling, El Tri, going into this big clash with South Korea, we spoke to our friend, host of the excellent We Came to Win podcast on Gimlet, Nando Villa in Los Angeles. Nando, first of all, can we just go back to the Germany game, if you don't mind? Was it true, all this business of there being seismic shocks in Mexico City?
Yeah, I mean, reportedly the goal celebrations caused a small seismic shock in Mexico. But apparently Juan Carlos Osorio, the Mexican coach, recruited the help of a Mexican university to help prepare for Germany, compiling a massive database of all kinds of statistics and it showed. It was an unbelievable performance and probably the best tactical game plan we've seen at the World Cup.
It's a long time since we've seen anyone dismantle the Germans in that fashion. Is he a little bit more popular now, Osorio, with the Mexican fans?
Yeah, I was talking to my friend Leon Krause, and he was telling me, because he's questioned him a lot in the past couple of years. And he was like, listen, man, that was the greatest victory in the history of Mexican football in the World Cup. So all is forgiven.
At the same time, given the amount that he tends to change his team, is there a fear that he's not going to leave well alone for the next game?
There's no doubt about it. He's never repeated a lineup in his time as the Mexican coach. Look for probably 3 to 4 changes in the lineup. You might see Carlos Vela drop for Tecatito Corona, or you might see Layún drop for someone like Jonathan Dos Santos. I guess the Mexicans would be assuming that they're not going to be playing as much of a counterattacking style against South Korea. They might want to hold the ball more, expecting South Korea to sit deep. So they're looking for players who are better in tight spaces rather than in the open field.
Nando, top of the group should mean you'd avoid the likes of Brazil in the last 16. And then who knows, maybe Mexico would finally make it to the quinto partido.
That's the Mexican sort of mental barriers. Can they get to the quinto partido? They always seem to qualify out of the group. They've done it, in the past several World Cups going back to 1994. But they always seem to lose in the round of 16 in sometimes unbelievable circumstances. Famous one, the Holland one, were with the Robin penalty at the end. But even they were close against Germany in 1998. They lost against Bulgaria in 1994. They lost against the United States in 2002. So yeah, the quinto partido, it's kind of like a mental barrier. And every year the hopes get built up because they usually do quite well in the group.
Nando Villa there, host of We Came to Win, which you can find on Gimlet. Mexico behind Sweden. I'm not sure on what criteria. Basically, Sweden and Mexico both on 3 points, same goal difference. Germany and Korea both on nil point currently.
Wow.
Which is surprising, huh? But this, a game that you would imagine, Jack, Mexico should be able to add another fat 3 points to their tally, no?
Yes, I would think so. South Korea didn't impress me a great deal against Sweden. I thought they looked fairly ordinary in possession. They defended, as many teams have this World Cup, in great numbers and with some determination, but didn't really have much spark. I don't think they had a shot on target in that game. It looks like they're going to change things up a little bit. There's rumours of a switch to a 4-4-2 with Tottenham's Son Heung-min, accompanied in attack by the man formerly known as the Korean Messi.
Oh yeah, who's that?
Lee Sung-woo, who maybe James can tell us a bit about, because I think he's been at Verona, hasn't he?
Yeah, he hasn't really done much and they've gone down. But they signed him from, I think he's got that name because they signed him from Barcelona.
Nice. All right, now before any of that happens in Group G, there's the early game, which features, of course, Belgium taking on Tunisia. That's at Spartak Stadium. Belgium coming off a fat 3-0 win over Panama. Dries Mertens with that spectacular opener, and then 2 from Lukaku. Interesting, the comments from Eden Hazard. Did you see this, where he says that he basically gave Lukaku a bit of a telling off at half-time? It's not easy playing with a man missing, Hazard said of Lukaku. At half-time, I told him we needed him. He'd been hiding out a bit up front. But once he got in there, involved in the game like magic, he scored 2. I hope he understands that now. That's nice of Eden. Spell it out for Romelu like that.
Yeah, I mean, they're very self-critical, aren't they, the Belgians? We saw that in the friendly with Mexico, where Kevin De Bruyne basically decided he was going to tell Roberto Martinez how to coach this team. So they have full and frank conversations in that dressing room.
Today, Roberto Martinez gave a press conference and he said to the Belgian press, I'm sorry we're being so boring. You're expecting us to fall out and squabble with each other. And we haven't. So I'm sorry you haven't got any headlines. But actually, as James was saying, if you look a little bit deeper, you have these curious incidents like Kevin De Bruyne taking out Adnan Januzaj in a training session and walking away without apologising. You have that slightly peculiar thing that Eden Hazard said about Romelu Lukaku. You had Jan Vertonghen having a big go at Yannick Carrasco during the last game. So there's clearly a little bit of tension there. Yeah. I'm not saying that there's anything, you know, more than that, but you've clearly got a lot of big characters in this team who aren't afraid to speak their mind to each other.
Yeah, you'll have Roberto Martinez in a sumo suit soon at the press conference.
Oh, let's hope so.
Yeah, that'd be brilliant. All right, Tunisia haven't won a World Cup game in 40 years, Jack. Will that change on Saturday?
I wouldn't have thought so. They're probably going to consider a fairly defensive approach given the extent to which they frustrated England in the second half. They left
Can they afford to be defensive, though, with no points so far?
Well, I think they will try and ease themselves into it. I think they were probably taken aback by just how open they were against England, how many chances they ceded in that game. And I don't think they'll be making that mistake again. The striker turned ancillary right-back, Fakhreddin Ben Youssef, today said they need to strike a balance. I think there's recognition there that at some point they will need to show a little bit more attacking ambition than the, well, zero attacking ambition they showed in the second half against England. I would question whether they have the ability to do that. And I think the more they come out, for example, if it stays 0-0 for the first half, if they come out, I think Belgium would absolutely lap that up because they're dying for some space to work into.
Are they? Okay. Fakhreddin Ben Youssef, who tactical reviews that I looked at, suggested could be key in that he might be able to attack that space that Carrasco, who's not a particularly good left back, may well leave. But hey, we'll find out anyway on Saturday. Let's get some odds now on the day 10 fixtures. Producer Ben has been speaking to Paddy Power.
Thank you, Jimbo. I'm here with Lee Price as usual. Lee, we're looking ahead to Saturday's games. It kicks off with Belgium versus Tunisia. What do you make of this one?
Belgium, despite everything, are huge favourites for this one. They're 2-7 to win the fixture. Tunisia, lengthy priced at 9-1, 9-2 the draw. I guess for England's benefit, a Belgium defeat would help. We might need to focus on our own results.
The rest of the action involves Germany's group. They're taking on Sweden in the evening game. They've really got a win here after getting done by Mexico. Are they going to do it?
This could be the story of the World Cup right here, couldn't it? Beaten by Mexico. Sweden weren't exactly superb against South Korea, but have got 3 points. If Germany fail to win this one, massive news. We don't think they will, though. They're 4-11 to win this fixture. Sweden a lengthy 8-1, and the draw is 10-3. Joachim needs to boost some love into his team.
Lovely. We really like the look of Mexico. They're going to take on South Korea, who looked, as you say, pretty weak. Chucky and Little P Chicharito to do something here.
Mexico are very exciting going forward. Chicharito and Irving Lozano, quite a double act. Their odds on to win this fixture, which won't surprise you. They're 4-9 to win the match. South Korea 7-1, 11-4 the draw. Hernandez to score any time is odds on at 8-11.
You can find out these odds and more at paddypower.com. It's 18 plus only. BeGambleAware.org. And when the fun stops, stop. By the way, if you'd like to send us a question or a comment, at The Totally Show is the place to do it on Twitter. Or you can find us on Facebook where there's, as you know, videos, quizzes, competitions and that kind of thing. We'll be back with you after the final whistle of the last of Saturday's games. So hopefully you'll be joining us for that. For now, I say thank you very much, Tom Williams, for joining us today.
A pleasure, as ever.
Jack Lang, merci beaucoup.
De rien.
And grazie mille, James Horncastle.
Jedike.
Above all, you listener, have a terrific Saturday. We'll catch you after.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, a Muddy Knees Media production. Subscribe now and get the latest episode delivered right to your phone for free. Supporting your team at the World Cup can be a phenomenal experience. But then Beckham boots Simeone, Lampard's goal isn't given, or someone puts on an England shirt and misses a penalty. The highs, more often than not, come with lows. And that's a little bit like life, really. So while we're all supposed to be buzzing with World Cup excitement and lapping up all this football, all that VAR and all those Nigeria kits, remember that someone close to you might be going through one of life's tougher times. Every day, on average, 12 men take their own life in the UK. That's your starting 11 and your manager every single day. Scary, huh? But that's part of the problem. Many of us still feel mental health and suicide are taboo topics, and this can stop men from opening up and getting support when they need it most. That's why we're working with Calm, the campaign against living miserably, a charity dedicated to preventing male suicide. We here at The Totally Football Show believe we should all support each other the way we support our team, through the ups and the downs, the glorious wins and the embarrassing red cards, the good days and the bad. So if you're worried that someone close to you is having a tough time, check in with them and let them know that Calm is there. Every day from 5 p.m. till midnight, Calm provides a free, confidential and anonymous helpline and web chat for any man who needs support. They've also got a website which is packed with the kind of info you need if you or any of your mates are having a rough one. Visit thecalmzone.net to find out more about Calm.